I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. If you had whiplash yesterday morning, you were not alone. There was news that Deputy Attorney General Ron Rosenstein, who was overseeing the Mueller investigation, was being fired, or that he was quitting his job, or that he was being taken to the White House woodshed. After the dust settled, it was announced that he is meeting with President Trump on Thursday. This was after the New York Times wrote that Rosenstein had suggested secretly taping the president and discussed the process of removing him from office, something he denied. Speaking of Thursday, that's when the Senate Judiciary Committee is scheduled to question Judge Brett Kavanaugh and Dr. Christine Blasey Ford about her allegations that Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her more than 30 years ago when they were both in high school, something that Kavanaugh strenuously denied. This past weekend, The New Yorker reported that Deborah Ramirez said that Kavanaugh had exposed himself to her when they were at a drunken party at Yale University, which he also denied. And lawyer Michael Avenatti, who was representing Stormy Daniels, said that he has a client claiming that Kavanaugh engaged in targeting women for gang rapes in high school. Kavanaugh told Fox last night that's totally false and outrageous. It's only Tuesday. Joining us from the New York studios of NPR is Victoria Bassetti. She's a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice and former subcommittee chief counsel for the Senate Judiciary Committee. That was from 1994 to 2003. Victoria Bassetti, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Be here.
Also with us and with us in our Philadelphia studios is Howard Fineman. He's NBC, MSNBC news analyst, wrote a book called The 13 American Arguments. He's also a lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania. Howard Fineman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's great to be here in Philadelphia.
Is Rod Rosenstein still the Deputy Attorney General of the United States?
As far as I know at this very minute, yes. And I think he's going to be so at least until Thursday. And my prediction is he'll probably be so after Thursday. I've covered Donald Trump. I know Donald Trump some. I know how he operates. I've been in his office up in the Trump Tower. If he's going to he doesn't like to fire people in person. I think he
just
likes
on
to,
TV apparently.
Yes, on TV. But he doesn't really like doing it. And so I have trouble conceiving that he's going to do that, especially on the day of the Kavanaugh hearings. If he goes nuclear on Rosenstein, that's going to affect the Kavanaugh hearing and not in a way that he would like, I don't think.
Do you think it was sort of hard to know what was going on yesterday? I was doing my interview and out of the corner of my eye watching television, having these sort of alternate realities going on. Was that a trial balloon? Was it confusion coming from the Justice Department, the White House?
I think it was first of all, it's always perilous to try to look for a grand master plan and what the White House is doing. It depends very much on Donald Trump's whims, and otherwise you can't tell. I think what happened is that Rosenstein apparently spoke with the president, I think, after the New York Times story came out. They had a phone conversation. I think that Chief of Staff Kelly invited Rosenstein to come over early yesterday before a principal's meeting that was going to be taking place anyway to hash it out a little bit. I don't know what happened between the two, but it's possible that they talked about Rosenstein leaving, and Rosenstein said, well, if anything definitive is going to happen, I want to talk to the president himself. But Kelly's gesture of being visibly escorting Rosenstein to the door, I don't know how that was generally interpreted in Washington as a friendly gesture. Oh, Who knows?
Victoria, let me get you in on the conversation. And one of the reasons we wanted to have you on is that you wrote something back for the Brennan Center back in the spring titled, What Happens Next If Rod Rosenstein Is Fired? What were you thinking back in April?
Well, I think the first thing is that it's not a question of if, but really when Rosenstein leaves the Department of Justice. President Trump has made it pretty clear that he expects to clean out or rearrange the top management at the Department of Justice sometime within the next, let's say, 3 to 6 months, as the case might be. Mm-hmm. But the real question about Rosenstein and whether or not he's fired versus whether or not he resigns really turns upon the Mueller investigation. As most everyone knows, Rosenstein is the one who's supervising the Mueller investigation because Jeff Sessions recused himself from doing so. So if Rosenstein is fired or resigns, it's going to possibly have a pretty big impact on this sprawling investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election.
Let me ask you, though, and this is, I mean, there is a difference between quitting your job or saying, you know, I'm done, versus being fired. Victoria, what implication, if you were fired, that brings back the Saturday Night Massacre memories of many years ago, but what's the difference there?
Right. So one of the things about trying to understand what's going on in Washington today is that you kind of sometimes need a law degree plus advanced HR management skills. As it happens, when anyone who's been appointed to a cabinet level or a high, you know, Senate confirmed position is leaves office, there's a mechanism for having someone step in and take over that person's job, while the office is essentially vacant and before the Senate can act. And the law that governs that is called the Vacancies Reform Act. Normally, if someone leaves office or resigns voluntarily, an acting person comes in and takes over the job, and or the president has the right to kind of put someone in as an acting person. You might recall when the Consumer Financial Protection Board office went vacant, President Trump put Mick Mulvaney in to take over the place. That was using the Vacancies Reform Act. The difference is if someone is fired, then the president does not seem to have the right to actually put in a handpicked successor. And it kind of goes into a standard bureaucratic process. If it goes into a standard bureaucratic process, I think a lot of people will feel slightly more confident that the rule of law is being respected, that whatever happens with Mueller is and the Mueller investigation and how it's supervised is being handled in kind of normal standard operating procedure. Whereas if President fires Rod Rosenstein in an effort to kind of seize control of who's overseeing that investigation, it really does raise a lot of red flags that the president is trying to interfere with an investigation that so deeply and directly affects him.
Let me go back, and I don't want to spend the whole hour on this New York Times story, but it's fascinating.
Oh, go ahead.
we have an hour, and we could do that, but there's so much else to talk about. But Rosenstein saying, look, I was being sarcastic or it was a joke when I said, you know, someone should be taping the president secretly. But Howard, you can't just walk into the Oval Office with a wire. I mean, don't you have to get a court order and doesn't that make you a witness? I'm just trying to figure out what this story is about.
Well, there's some conflict on the reporting. NBC, my colleagues at NBC, including Pete Williams, who I have enormous respect for, takes the sarcasm side of things, that this was a heated discussion. Rosenstein said, well, what do you want me to do? You know, and that he was mentioning these things as a way of knocking them down and showing the difficulty of the situation. The New York Times is sticking to its guns here.
They are.
And they are saying, no, we understand that's the spin back, but we have plenty of sources here telling us that this is the case. I think in the end, it doesn't really matter. If you're the Deputy Attorney General, you don't utter, even as a joke, the idea of wearing a wire into the Oval Office, which apparently he really, you know, he didn't really deny that. And that plays right into all of the deep state paranoid theories that the White House loves to spin out there about They're out to get us, and we can't trust the Justice Department, and we can't trust the Mueller investigation, and Rod Rosenstein shouldn't have been appointed, and Sessions shouldn't have recused himself. We got to clean, as Victoria was saying, and they are going to do that. I agree. They're going to get rid of them. The only question is, do they do it this Thursday?
Right.
And I somehow doubt that. And I would also add that in a weird way, at least for a little while, a damaged Rod Rosenstein is useful to the White House.
How so?
Well, first of all, they can try and haul him up to the Mark Meadows of the Freedom Caucus has said, I want him up on the Hill. We want to interview him about this wire wearing a wire thing. So they think they can extract some political benefit out of beating him up on the Hill. And also, if by some chance Rosenstein wants to keep his job, and I'm not sure he does, that affords Trump the opportunity to say, okay, well, if you want to keep the job, you know, try being a little more fair to me here. So I don't know if that any of that's going to happen, but that's part of the mix here as we look at the possibilities.
And so many things going on, Victoria. A couple of the President Trump's lawyers talked about sort of slowing down this Mueller investigation. But are there questions about insubordination by even jokingly suggesting of you know, using the 25th Amendment or secretly taping the president?
Well, I don't think that anyone in the White House can be surprised that, given the president's constant attacks on the Department of Justice, there have been conversations within the Department of Justice about how to react to it and whether or not these are fair or unfair sort of attacks. So they can't be particularly surprised about it. And vis-a-vis insubordination, there's the most of the evidence is that Rosenstein has gone along with many of the things that President Trump has wanted him to do. The one big thing that he hasn't done is obviously shut down or slow down the Mueller investigation. But in every other regard, when you take a look at what the Department of Justice has done over the course of President Trump's terms, they've rather faithfully executed his agenda. So it's hard to say that what happened was insubordinate. If and how this conversation occurred, it was probably a perfectly natural conversation that occurred during a peak moment of crisis and tumult around the time of Comey's firing, and that since that conversation occurred, Rosenstein has actually, in many ways, except the biggest, been a faithful soldier for President Trump.
Well, and interestingly, Howard, when President Trump was looking for a reason to fire Comey, Rosenstein gave it to him, which was Comey's mishandling of the Clinton emails.
Yes, and to, of course, a lot of Democrats, that's the original sin. But I think Rod Rosenstein is a survivor. He's a very shrewd inside player. And I think he wanted to, both for personal reasons and I think for patriotic reasons of, you know, trying to calm the waters and put some measure of due process in this thing. He wrote the memo that
right.
Trump, but I don't think he says that he wasn't. Or it has been said that he thinks that he didn't expect the president to wave that around publicly.
Is that naive on his part?
And he's not naive, so he had to have known that that might happen, and I think he wanted it perhaps to happen to show the president that there would be a fair adjudicator atop the Mueller investigation. I don't know if there's anything to this. Maybe it's just because I'm in Philadelphia and I'm teaching at Penn, but don't forget that both Rod Rosenstein and, oddly enough, Donald Trump are undergraduate graduates of the Wharton School. And I could just imagine at some point Donald Trump saying to Rod Rosenstein, hey, Rod, you know, let's sing the old Wharton College song, if there is one. And, you know, since Rosenstein was willing to play along with that, but he got in trouble on the other side. He reminds me a little bit sometimes of Comey, in that James Comey, in an effort to prove how pure as the driven snow he was all too political, and it got him in trouble.
Let's hold on to that thought only because we have to take a very short break. That's Howard Fineman, NBC, MSNBC news analyst. Victoria Bassetti with us as well. She's a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice, and we are talking about the avalanche of news in the last couple of days. You can join us 1-888-477-9499. Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Again, talking with Howard Fineman and Victoria Bassetti, spending the first portion of the show today talking about what happened yesterday with Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Let me just play a clip. This is President Trump speaking on Fox and Friends back in August 23rd about Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
Jeff Sessions recused himself, which he shouldn't have done, or he should have told me. Even my enemies say that Jeff Sessions should have told you that he was going to recuse himself, and then you wouldn't have put him in. He took the job, and then he said, I'm going to recuse myself. I said, what kind of a man is this? And by the way, he was on the campaign. You know, the only reason I gave him the job, because I felt loyalty. He was an original supporter. Mm-hmm. He was on the campaign. He knows there was no collusion.
Victoria Bassetti, President Trump more recently told The Hill that I do not have an attorney general. What are we to make of the attacks by the president of the United States on his Justice Department and his attorney general?
They are just unprecedented, absolutely staggering. The idea that he doesn't have an attorney general is shocking. He does. He has an attorney general who has regularly pursued his agenda regarding a vast majority of things. There's only, again, one thing that Jeff Sessions hasn't done, and that's to shut down the Russia investigation. It's pretty shocking that the president can't detach himself from that and see the Department of Justice as the institution that it is, which is the nation's top law enforcement organization that's not supposed to be politicized and that's not supposed to be used to further the personal agenda of the president.
I mean, it seems, Howard, that the president doesn't always understand that the attorney general works for the people, not for him.
Well, that's not just true of the attorney general. That's his view of the entire government. That's his view of the entire political system. I mean, Donald Trump thinks everybody either now works for or will work for him at some point. They're all part of his team, his clan, either that or they're the enemy. And that's how he views everything. I mean, Donald Trump has no concept whatsoever of the law other than as an annoyance that got in his way when he was a real estate developer in New York, where he could manipulate the system to his purposes. He has no concept of what the federal government and the rule of law, quite frankly, are. That's just not part of his cosmos. It's not part of his thinking. And when he says, "What kind of man is this who recuses himself?" Well, in Washington, that is seen as an act of courage and probity, not weakness. But that's the way Donald Trump thinks.
You've been around a while, Howard Fineman.
I have.
Covering Washington, D.C. Through, I'm assuming, Watergate, Iran-Contra.
Well, believe it or not, there are a few things that are slightly before my time.
Okay, fair enough.
And Watergate is one of them.
Okay.
But I was down in Kentucky beginning my newspaper career. I wasn't in Washington.
But nonetheless, obviously, yeah. Following the news. Have we been here before?
Yes, we have. And this does have echoes of Watergate, for sure, because I think Richard Nixon had a disregard, a contempt for the law when it got in his way, but he knew that he was supposed to exhibit a respect for the law. After all, he was a lawyer and a pretty good one. And I think there was some residual sense that he ought to not only be seen as caring about it, but caring about it. He was weak. Talk about weakness. He was weak, and then he jettisoned his training. This is different. Donald Trump has no such background, no such respect, and he is a tribal leader, not a political figure in the traditional sense. I don't think we've had anybody quite like him as president, certainly in my time, and possibly ever.
How about for you, Victoria? And again, just so our listeners know, former subcommittee chief counsel for the Senate Judiciary Committee a number of years ago, from 94 to 03. How do you see what's going on?
Well, the main difference, I think, between Nixon and Trump is that in the case of Trump, he's doing it before our eyes and in public. Nixon at least seemed to have the sense of, if you want to call it, decency to hide a lot of his behavior and to try to cover it up. And in stark contrast, Trump is just outright doing it. Throughout the course of American history, of course, there have always been periods where presidents have attempted to manipulate the Department of Justice or abuse their power. But the unique thing about Trump, especially in comparison with Nixon, is that in Trump's case, the investigation into him directly affects his personal fame and fortune in a way that Nixon's did, but the kind of the sense of the personal attack that Trump feels has escalated this, and it has made this more extreme, I think, in some ways, his reactions more extreme than even Nixon's were. So it's certainly a kind of a very knife's edge sort of era that we're living in right now.
Well, I do want to talk about Kavanaugh and the...
Speaking of knife's edge.
Yes, exactly.
Right,
but
right.
Let me just... A question from Kyle wanting to know how many high-level officials in the Justice Department are subject to appointment like the Attorney General and serve at the pleasure of the President. Victoria, if I can toss that to you, what's the answer to that?
Yeah, off the top of my head, I don't know the exact count, but you know, there are probably in excess of 25 people at the Department of Justice who are appointed by the president and who are confirmed by the Senate. Maybe slightly less than 25. And in addition, throughout the United States, there are U.S. attorneys, each of whom is also individually appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. But when you're really talking about Maine justice, that big building over on Pennsylvania Avenue, you're talking about probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 people who are appointed and then confirmed by the Senate.
And if
it ranges from, you know, like the Solicitor General of the United States, the head of the Antitrust Division, the top national security lawyer for the United States, those are the sort of people who are appointed and confirmed by the Senate.
Is it correct that if Rosenstein were to resign, then the president could pick, does he have to pick somebody who was nominated and confirmed by the Senate to replace him? Mm. Is that right,
well,
Victoria?
He could actually pick someone who was nominated and confirmed by the Senate anywhere in the executive branch. He could find the undersecretary of corn.
Don't give him any ideas.
I didn't know there was an undersecretary of corn.
I'm making it up. I'm so sorry, but you know what I mean. He literally could pluck almost anyone out of any agency who happens to have been confirmed and put him or her in place. To go back to the example of the Consumer Financial Protection Board and Mick Mulvaney, that's exactly how that happened.
And should we keep our eye on Solicitor General Noel Francisco, Victoria, and then we'll move on?
Exactly. So if it seems like Noel Francisco is next in line, I hasten to add, normally the number three person at the Department of Justice would be in line. That's the Associate Attorney General. And that is it was a woman named Rachel Brand who resigned in the spring, allegedly, or at least according to some reports, out of concerns about all of the attacks on the Department of Justice and concerns about the Mueller investigation. And the White House has actually given up on looking for a replacement for her, because they've had so much trouble finding anyone who's willing to raise their hand and take the job. So because that position is absent, they have to go down to Noel Francisco, who is the Solicitor General of the United States, to take over the job. And Noel Francisco himself may not even be able to take over for Rosenstein because of a series of conflicts that he might also have that might force him to recuse, in which case it'll go down the line to another person at the Department of Justice who also might have conflicts forcing him to recuse, which means it'll go down to another person. So the Department of Justice right now is a kind of a mess of people with a bunch of conflicts and not knowing where to turn and who's going to be in charge at any one particular moment.
That's Victoria Bassetti. She's a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice, joining us from the NPR studios in New York. Howard Fineman with us in our Philadelphia studios. He's NBC, MSNBC news analyst, also a lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania. And again, you can join us 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Many ways to join our conversation. Let me play another clip, and I do want to talk about Judge Kavanaugh. This is President Trump speaking yesterday at the United Nations in New York.
Judge Kavanaugh is an outstanding person, and I am with him all the way. We'll see how it goes with the Senate. We'll see how it goes with the vote. I think it could be, there's a chance that this could be one of the single most unfair, unjust things to happen to a candidate for anything. But I am with Judge Kavanaugh, and I look forward to a vote and for people to come out of the woodwork from 36 years ago and 30 years ago and never mention it. All of a sudden it happens. In my opinion, it's totally political. It is totally political.
Howard, is the Judiciary Committee, are they up to this task on Thursday when both Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Blasey Ford will be before them?
Well, I think they've designed it in a way that they can't be up to the task. They've set one day for this, and they're not allowing any other witnesses. The key one, of course, would be the now famous Mark Judge, the ironically named Mark Judge, who's in the room in high school.
Dr. Ford identified.
He's not being called. There are no other witnesses being called. It's not clear what's going to happen with Deborah Martinez, the woman from Yale. She's probably not going to get a chance.
Ramirez, excuse me, get a chance.
Although, interestingly, Sarah Huckabee Sanders said this morning that they would be open to having her come testify. How's she going to come? I mean, how are they going to do this in one day? What's the drama going to be like? No, it's going to be completely inadequate. The fact that Judge Kavanaugh went on Fox last night is truly extraordinary and reveals the, you know, look, Supreme Court nomination hearings are always political. So the Supreme Court is not immune from politics. But I don't remember a true circus like this since probably Clarence Thomas.
Yeah. Let me play a clip from last night's interview on Fox. Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh interviewed last night talking about the allegations against him.
What I know is the truth. And the truth is I've never sexually assaulted anyone in high school or otherwise. I am not questioning and have not questioned that perhaps Dr. Ford at some point in her life was sexually assaulted by someone in some place. But what I know is I've never sexually assaulted anyone.
You know, Victor, I think everyone is just betwixt and between when it comes to this particular case. How do you see how Judge Kavanaugh is handling this?
Well, I have to say that the decision to go on Fox News was probably not the way to de-escalate the situation or to convince Democrats that this was being handled in a fair or transparent manner. I would go back to something Howard said when he described President Trump as tribal. Well, the same thing is happening in the Senate Judiciary Committee. The two tribes, the Democrats and the Republicans at this stage, are fully armed, convinced that the other person shot first and that there's no opportunity for any of them to – they believe each side is operating in bad faith. Having the nominee go on Fox News, which is widely regarded as essentially a propaganda arm of the Republican Party, at least that's how it's regarded in Democratic circles, is no way to de-escalate the situation. And it's no way to convince people that you want a full and dispassionate and careful examination of the facts. So I understand his impulse and his desire to defend what he regards as his good reputation. But the time and moment for that to have happened was on Thursday when he could be properly questioned and when all of the facts could have been laid out. Going on Fox News did not de-escalate it. It probably hardened the position of Democrats that he is a partisan operator.
Well, quite frankly, they don't care about the Democrats. Quite frankly, I think what the White House has decided is that they're putting pedal to the metal. They want this to be a political confrontation, and they think they're going to somehow muscle the vote through on the floor of the Senate. It's a big gamble. We'll see.
Well, yeah, I would say that when he appeared on Fox News, he really had an audience of about four people.
Right.
And they were it was one was President Trump,
right,
and the other three people were the possible swing senators on the Republican side, the Collins, Murkowski, Senator Flake. That was his
right.
audience.
I agree.
Howard, you and I were talking about this before going on the air. Judge Kavanaugh said on Fox yesterday that he was a virgin, and he was a virgin through high school, through college, and even beyond. But he's not being accused of, how do I say this on the radio? He's being accused of
penetration.
Penetration, thank you.
You're welcome.
He's being accused of sexual assault.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether that tells us something about
Well, I don't,
I
as somebody who's watched a lot of these things, you know, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. I was there when that was spoken, and this has been a crimson thread through everything I've covered, really, over the decades. To me, that was not the most convincing defense that he gave of himself last night. It was a little squirrely in the sense that declaring yourself to have been a virgin is completely beside the point and is sort of a kind of retro explanation in defense that rings utterly false in the Me Too era. And that, as Victoria was saying, that if Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins were listening to that, and Jeff Flake and a lot of others, most of the country is saying, what? That doesn't have anything to do with it.
Right.
And the fact that he said, well, maybe somebody assaulted her, it wasn't me. But he didn't say that either exactly. He didn't say, you have to parse the words carefully. I don't believe that he said it was not me. I did not do it to her. He said I never assaulted anyone. And the generalized state, look, he is being prepped by and advised by some of the best lawyers in Washington, including Beth Wilkinson, who's almost a legend in D.C. as a great, she was a great prosecutor and now a great defense attorney. There's a lot of parsing that went into that. I didn't find it as a substantive matter all that convincing.
Victoria, let me go back to you, and we're almost up in a break here, but many people have said, and I think legitimately so, get the FBI involved in that. Let them do their investigation, a neutral party. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen, but if they were to do that, would they come up with the kind of evidence that either side wants?
Well, what they would be able to do is interview a lot of the people who were in those high school and in those areas around that time, and would be able to establish a fact pattern about the typical behavior of Brett Kavanaugh and his friends, of Dr. Ford. They would also be able to bring to bear a lot of expertise about sexual assault reporting, about the false reporting, about memories of traumatic events. So they would be able to bring to bear their expertise and their ability to really assess an entire situation. Now, there's no way that the FBI is 35 years after the fact going to be able to, you know, find that room where it happened and get forensic evidence, as it were, about what actually happened. That's over. But the fact of the matter is that the FBI can and does regularly investigate old crimes or old incidents. They regularly and systematically investigate the background of people who may have, let's say, you know, they talk to people about whether or not when the person was in college or law school, they smoked pot, or whether or not they, you know, drank too much, and establish those sort of facts, which are important.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Victoria Bassetti. She's a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice, Howard Fineman, NBC, MSNBC news analyst. We have much more to discuss after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times. This Thursday, the Senate Judiciary Committee is scheduled to be questioning Judge Brett Kavanaugh and Dr. Christine Blasey Ford about her allegations that he sexually assaulted her when they were in high school. This is something that Kavanaugh has denied. Let me play something that Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said yesterday on the Senate floor defending Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh.
This is what the so-called resistance has become. A smear campaign, pure and simple, aided and abetted by members of the United States Senate.
Howard, why do you think the Republicans, the White House, McConnell, why are they fighting so hard for Kavanaugh?
Well, it's ironic because the word is that Mitch McConnell didn't want Kavanaugh as the nominee.
Too much paper trail.
Too much paper trail, and it may, he may have been worried slightly that even though Kavanaugh is a brilliant political slash legal maneuverer, he's like the ward, he's like the precinct chairman of the Federalist Society. That would be great, but he had this inconvenient long paper trail. And what that was a euphemism for was that he worked for Ken Starr against Bill Clinton, or on Bill Clinton, and that he worked in the George Bush White House, and that would cause the Democrats to want all the documents from there, et cetera, et cetera. That's what he was talking about. But now that they're in it, they've decided they're going to try to muscle it through. And for McConnell, who has built his whole career on this, who went so far as to destroy whatever shred of comity was left in the Senate by not allowing Merrick Garland, the Democratic nominee, to come forward, is now kicking and screaming and threatening. And by the way, the pressure, as Victoria was noting, I would add that the pressure on Murkowski and Collins and Flake is going to be absolutely enormous. They're going to be offered Lord knows what, or threatened who knows how.
Victoria, how much, or let me put it another way, is this tainting, though, the whole judicial nomination process, or even if Kavanaugh makes it to the court, tainting the U.S. Supreme Court?
it's hard to say how much other than to say a lot. It's really hard to figure out whether and how and when the Judiciary Committee manages to regain its footing or any sense of equilibrium about how it processes judicial nominees. The sense of grievance on the Democratic side is profoundly high. If you watched the hearings that occurred a few weeks ago, it was hard to miss the level of anger and the sense of frustration and sense of woundedness that the Democrats have. That was before any of this started. So it's you actually saw senators, you know, kind of willfully breaking committee confidentiality rules and asking to be, you know, asking to be disciplined, possibly, you know, another senator threatening to have someone ejected from the Senate over this stuff before this even started. How they recover, I really don't know.
Let me read some comments, and then I have some more questions here. One from a tweet from Sophie. Maybe I'm just cynical, but I really don't think the GOP cares what Kavanaugh did. They want to put another accused sexual predator on the court to legislate what women can do to their bodies. That's certainly a point of view, and we should say these are allegations. An email from Stephen. Kavanaugh's only defense is that he has no recollection, yet his condition would have been such that he could not remember anything. A comment from Jerry. Is it proper to judge a guy by how he behaved in high school? I probably didn't behave well either, but I'm 58. Dick Cheney had two DUIs. And that is one of the questions, Howard, that hangs over all this, which is if what Kavanaugh is accused of doing is sexual assault. And I would assume that many men have not engaged in something like that.
Well, on the high school thing, a very shrewd lawyer who's not involved in the case but knows a lot said to me, the key detail there disputed, but the key detail, the key accusation is the hand over the mouth.
The hand over the mouth.
The hand over the mouth.
When she said
was screaming for help, and by her account, he put a hand over her mouth to try to stop her from protesting and being known. So that makes that serious. What makes the Yale thing important, if true, is now you're going into adulthood, even by legal standards, by any legal standard, it's a different situation. I think that story is a little more tenuous, some might argue. And even the Times, to its credit, in the story said, you know, some of these people aren't corroborating things, some people don't know. So I think that's what triggered the White House to go all out, pedal to the metal, political.
Let me turn back to you, Victoria. And there is talk that the Republican members of the Judiciary Committee, I should add, all white men, are thinking of, hiring a woman to do their questioning for them. What do you make of that?
And are you available? And are you available?
Yeah,
right. I don't think they would want me doing it.
Are they saying that because we're men, we cannot ask these sensitive and in certain ways difficult questions?
You know, look, I think they understand. It's a political process. They clearly understand the optics of having a panel of men asking a sexual assault victim a bunch of tough, skeptical, or even mean questions, as the case might be. They certainly do remember what happened in the wake of the Anita Hill hearings. So they're really trying to avoid that optic. But in the process, of course, they're really not avoiding the optic. They're just simply shining a stronger spotlight on it when all of the Democratic senators are going to be asking questions, and the male Republican senators keep turning to this unknown person, we don't even know who it is at this stage of the game, to take the questions. I honestly don't believe that that's what's going to end up happening. I don't believe that they're going to go with someone because they don't necessarily know or trust her performance. There's too much of a risk in putting her up there. I think they would much rather maintain control of their questioning than that. And I think that they're going to come to realize that they're not really fooling anyone by putting someone up there. I can't even remember the last time the Senate Judiciary Committee had an independent counsel asking questions.
Go ahead, Howard.
I think that's true, but I'm not sure if they can find somebody and work it out. I think the Republicans may try it, because what the Republicans don't want is video for future ads in which Senator, Republican, white male Senator X is asking a tough question of Dr. Blasey Ford.
Badgering a sexual assault victim is not a good look.
Right, assuming that she presents herself well. That is nothing but poison on videotape. And if there's a way they can figure out, I agree, they might not be able to figure out a way. But this is one case where the senator's normal desire to be on TV and on the camera at all times, they're going to be running as far away from this as they possibly can while, you know, railroading the whole thing through, if they can do that.
Well, and I'm thinking of back in the Anita Hill days when she was testifying, Arlen Specter accusing her of flat-out perjury. There was the word erotomania, a little bit nutty, a little bit slutty. Yeah. Has the country, have Republicans, have they learned anything from since that time, Howard?
Well, Joe Biden did an interview the other day on NBC and said that he had learned that his regret was that he hadn't better controlled the other members of the committee, which was, that's what he said. To me, I'm not sure that was enough. But have we learned anything? I don't know. All I know is that the politics of and the questions about sexual harassment and relations of this kind have become central, even more central to our politics than ever. And I do think that the personal behavior and character, when you judge the character of somebody of the Supreme Court, their attitude towards women, their behavior with women, which may in an earlier era have seen almost beside the point, is central to our politics and central to the assessment of the Constitution. So I think it's very, very valid. It couldn't be more valid at this time of the Me Too movement than it is now.
That's Howard. That's okay. That's Howard Fineman along with Victoria Bassetti. And again, talking about the events of this week, certainly what is scheduled to happen on Thursday, which is Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Christine Blasey Ford testifying or being questioned before the Senate Judiciary Committee, 1-888-477-9499, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Victoria, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, not only have they not necessarily learned the lesson of the Anita Hill hearings, and I would hasten to add that there are, of course, some members of the Republican side of the Senate Judiciary Committee who are good and sensitive about this. But overall, the lesson that may have been learned in the course of the Me Too movement by some parts of the Republican Party is that actually opposing it is politically beneficial. There's a large core of Republican politicians who gin up hostility towards the Me Too movement. You just listen to that McConnell statement and ask yourself whether or not accusing a resistance movement run amok and engaging in a smear campaign isn't actually an attack on the entire Me Too movement for political gain.
Victoria, though, let me ask you, you both mentioned the fact that everyone will be watching how Dr. Blasey Ford is questioned, but it seems to me that she is entitled, and the country is entitled, to some tough questioning. Victoria?
I don't disagree. I mean, there certainly are a lot of people who are concerned about the length of time that it took her to report the assault, although I hasten to add, it's perfectly standard for that sort of amount of time to pass between someone begins discussing or their sexual assault. But there should be a proper and sensitive airing of these questions that will – her answers will only make her more credible depending upon how she performs at the hearing on Thursday. There's nothing wrong with asking her tough questions, but there's definitely something wrong with badgering her or accusing her of smearing people. And there's a lot of there's a lot of nasty rhetoric going on out there.
Howard.
If we as a society are going to decide, and I think we have decided – that the question of sexual assault and sexual relations as it relates to public life, procedures are needed. This needs to be looked at carefully. As others have pointed out, on college campuses, administrators over the last 10 or 15 years dealing with the cutting edge of this, the wave of this in the younger generation, have worked out procedures, sometimes cumbersome, not always perfect, but they have a process. And we have to stop smacking our foreheads and saying, oh my God, why are we discussing this? This is not a generation ago with Anita Hill.
Right.
It's not Gary Hart. It's not any of that stuff. This is what we talk about. This is politics today and deserves to be properly vetted and discussed. It's tough for everybody. And that's what has to happen.
And I would add that the way that this hearing has been set up also is not aiming at a full understanding of the situation. Actually calling and discussing this situation with trauma experts, with sex assault experts, with people who understand memory, having actual experts there at the hearing and more witnesses than simply these two people is really the way to understand and contextualize what happened and also to further the nation's understanding of this problem.
Let me do one more clip. This is Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii. She's actually one of four women on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and she was being interviewed by Jake Tapper on Sunday's State of the Union.
I think that this kind of attitude is what makes it really difficult for our victims and survivors of these kinds of traumatic events to even come forward. You know, we don't seem to have come very far from the Anita Hill days. But as I said, for the Wall Street Journal to come out and talk to me about due process, or all the women out there that I'm hearing about who never came forward, it is really important not only for these survivors to be heard, but if their story is credible, as Dr. Ford's story is, they need to be believed.
You know, Howard, there's so many complications. One is that we've got a president of the United States, I think accused numerous, I've lost track of the number, I think maybe 15 counts or charges of sexual misconduct. We have Bill Clinton, Juanita Broderick back in the 1990s. There are questions about, you know, her allegations that he had raped her. So you've got presidents of the United States who have their own particular and very damning baggage.
Well, I would try to clear away the underbrush and just focus on the fact that we're talking about putting somebody on the Supreme Court for a lifetime appointment who has been accused now of two different occasions in which he behaved in what might be argued to be sexually assaultive ways. That is no longer, if it ever was, a minor thing or a side issue. It's central to our constitutional jurisprudence at this point, because all these issues have to be adjudicated as a matter of right and as a matter of law, and so it's very pertinent. Now, she may not be telling the truth, who knows, but you got to find out, and you got to do it in a calm and dispassionate way, which, of course, are two words that have nothing to do with the way Washington exists now.
Victoria, I'm giving you the last word. You have about 12 seconds. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. Filibustered.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think at the end of the day, what we're talking about is someone who wants a job with lifetime tenure on the Supreme Court of the United States. It's really not too much to ask that before that person gets that job, he probably shouldn't have sexually assaulted people. So it's important to get to the bottom of the matter.
Victoria Bassetti, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
And she's a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice. Howard Fineman, thank you for coming in and joining us as well.
Delighted to do it.
And he's NBC, MSNBC news analyst. He's also a lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show. Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Sign up for our newsletter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us.